This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Next month, when we turn on our TVs to watch the Olympic Games, it might look as if a lot of those men and women were born to star on the world stage. But athletes make themselves into Olympians. At that level, competition demands complete dedication. To make it, they have to put their sport first, often for many years, and fit school and work and family around the workouts, training, practice, and lesser competitions. And after all of that, many will not get to go to Beijing, and only a few of those who do will come home with medals. Today, we talk with athletes about the Olympics and what they have to give up to get there. If you've ever competed at that level, call and tell us your story. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org, and you can share your story on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later in the program, Academy Award-winning director Alex Gibney joins us to talk about his latest documentary, Gonzo, the Life and Work of Dr. Hunter S. Thompson. Joining us now from his hotel room in Eugene, Oregon, the site of the 2008 U.S. Track and Field Olympic Trials, is Adam Nelson. He's a shot putter and silver medal winner in the 2000 and 2004 Summer Olympics. You may recognize his name from Tom Goldman's reports on National Public Radio. Adam, thanks very much for being with us today.
Hey, thanks for having me, Neil.
And you're at the trial now. Tell us what it was like.
The Olympic trials here in Eugene have been just phenomenal. Eugene is really known as the Track City USA, and they've had 20,000 plus people there every single day inside the stadium, and probably another 5 or 10,000 hanging out in the festival around the stadium. The competition itself was I think everything that everybody thought it would be. We had two great performances with Christian and Reese Hoffa going. I guess, well, Reese won with a first place finish, and I was third, and Christian was second. But mm-hmm. It was a great performance, and I think we got a great team going on to Eugene in the shot put.
And
going on to Beijing.
4 years, maybe the Olympics will be in Eugene, maybe another time. But I have to ask you, you're an old hand at this by this point, but you know, going into this competition, one bad day and 4 years of work means you're not going to Beijing.
Yeah, I had a bit of a scare too on Saturday. I was in fourth place going into the finals, and I was thinking about that as we stepped in the ring for the finals there, and I knew I needed to improve. Fortunately, I was able to improve just enough to make the team. But I tell you, it is it's not all for loss if you don't make the team. It's a tremendous accomplishment to compete at the Olympic trials and to compete at this level. Some days you just don't have it, and my heart goes out to those guys that do finish fourth or fifth and end up being alternates on the team.
They've got to be tremendously disappointed.
Absolutely. We spend, a lot of people make the mistake and believe that the Olympics really happens only once every 4 years, but it really doesn't. For Olympic athletes and Olympic hopefuls, it's an everyday thing for 4 years. We spend, in my event, I spend several hours, 3 to 6 hours every single day for 4 years training for what really amounts to less than a minute and a half total of competition time. And if you're not on that day, there is no room. There's no appeals process. There's no such thing as, I can get through because of my past performances. You have to perform on that day. There's a lot of pressure, a lot of stress. And ultimately, that's what the Olympic trials, that's why the Olympic trials are America's hardest team to make.
Tell us what you do on a normal day. I mean, we're not talking about the Olympic trials, but just a regular Tuesday.
A regular Tuesday. A regular Tuesday, I'm actually in business school at the University of Virginia at the Darden School of Business. So a regular Tuesday would probably involve some class time and some study time. After class, typically I go out and train. I get my first training session in outside on the track, and that's about an hour and a half to 2 hours of anything from conditioning to throwing workouts and stretching routines afterwards. And then I'll go back and hit the books for a little bit, spend some time with my wife. And after that, I'll go back and finish my second workout of the day, which is about another hour and a half or two. And that tends to be weight work and another stretching routine.
And do you ever say to yourself, geez, NCIS is on tonight?
That's why we have TiVo, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, yes, certainly you do. You make those daily sacrifices. Certainly, you don't have the opportunity to spend a whole lot of time in front of the television. Watching different shows. But the most important thing for me is during my free time is to spend it with my friends and family. I don't get that opportunity a lot once the competitive season starts up, and certainly once I start traveling and really preparing in the final moments for an Olympic Games. Those are the times when I have to be very selfish, and fortunately, my family and my friends and everybody that I work with knows that I'm not really trying to ignore them or not trying to ignore them. I'm really just trying to focus on what I need to do to prepare for my competition at the Olympics.
We're talking with shot putter Adam Nelson, who will be going to his third Olympic Games, this time in Beijing. He won silver medals in 2000 and 2004. If you've competed at that level or near that level, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And Adam, as you think about the games, you now have a little bit of perspective. What's the difference between you now and you 8 years ago?
Well, 8 years ago is my first Olympic Games. I was extraordinarily excited just to be there, and I really wasn't even focused on the competition. I think I'd sort of bought into sort of the whole Olympic movement and how special it really is and how much of an accomplishment it is just to even be there. Winning my first silver medal was a great accomplishment for me, and I was very excited about that. But then in the second Olympics, I wanted to improve upon it. And I kind of had an interesting second Olympics in 2004. I really did actually struggle with some of the motivation throughout that year, which was kind of interesting for me because I've never had that problem before. But I got into the Olympics, and I was in a great position. I was healthy and ready to throw far, and I ended up tying and losing in a tiebreaker to the ultimate winner. So this Olympics, for me, it's about attaining a great performance on the day that matters the most. And I've yet to really do that in the past two Olympics. And so I'm really gearing myself physically and mentally to have a peak right at the Olympics on that specific day, August 15th in Beijing. And if I can do that, if I can have a great performance in Beijing, it doesn't matter what the outcome is, I'll be very satisfied.
So even if you finish second again or don't get a medal at all, if you do what you think is your best, that's good.
Yeah, exactly. You know, In 2000, I had this opportunity to actually talk with Tommy Lasorda, the great baseball manager for the Dodgers for so many years.
And he was the manager of the U.S. team in Sydney that year.
He was, and that's how I got to know him. He pulled me aside one day on the way out of the Olympic cafeteria, and he said, "How do you think you're gonna play? When do you play?" I said, "Well, I'll play on Friday." And he said, "How do you think you're going to do?" And I said, "Well, I can only go out there and try my best." And when I said that, I noticed the blood start to boil over his head. And he said, "Try." He said, "Losers try. Winners go out there and do." And so it's taken maybe a little bit of time for that to set in. But, the point was made right there in the Olympic Village in 2000. But I think I really started to embrace what he was saying and his theories on performance and athletes over the last few years, and that we don't go out there and try our best. We go out there and do our best. And there's a very subtle but very important difference between the two. And I think in 2000, I went out and tried my best. In 2004, I still tried my best, even though I intended to do my best, if that makes sense. And this year, I plan on doing my best.
We're talking with Adam Nelson, who's going to put the shot, I guess is the way you put it, in Beijing. 800-989-8255. Charlotte joins us on the phone from Oakland, California.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I was an Olympic hopeful for 1964 Olympics, and I tell you, we women didn't have any help then, and I trained 3 to 4 hours a day, 7 days a week. Our parents had to give little social gatherings to raise money for us to travel. I set a world indoor record in 1965 for the 400 meters. I was the Olympic hopeful for the 400 meters back then, but women weren't especially helped along the way with no money, no transportation given to them or anything. And I missed my whole high school years because I trained and went to sports events every weekend.
And you said you were hopeful, so you did not make the Olympic team.
No, I didn't make the Olympic team, but at 16, I thought that was pretty good to set a world record.
That's pretty great. So any regrets about all that time you missed and part
Not
of your youth?
You know what? Even though it was tough and we didn't have a lot of outside help, I would never, ever undo that part of my life.
Well, congratulations. And do you still run this today?
No, now I do weight training.
Well, congratulations for that, too, Charlotte.
Thank you, and yay for all our Olympic hopefuls out there.
Thanks very much for the call. And I'm sure many listeners would say that, amen to that, Adam. But I have to ask, obviously, you can't control what the other competitors do. But if you throw a good one and your big competitor comes up, you never wish, you know, hey, trip.
No, you know, I think I have a better perspective on it than that. And I like to beat people when they're at their best. And if I go out and throw a great performance, have a great distance, something well over the 22-meter or 72-foot mark, then I hope that somebody else is going to respond with a great throw to maybe push me even farther. So I'm very supportive of the other athletes, and I want to beat them when they're at their best and not when they have a bad day. I don't wish ill will on anyone. I certainly don't wish them to fall, although, you know, there are certain times when you realize, man, it would be a lot easier if this person didn't throw that far.
It would be a lot easier.
But, you know, we didn't get into this sport to beat people when they're not throwing very far or competing very well. We came in here knowing that if we're going to win the big days, you got to beat people when they're at their best.
Adam, good luck to you and stay healthy.
Thank you very much, Neil. Thanks for having me.
Adam Nelson is a shot putter on the 2008 American Olympic team, also was in 2004 and in 2000. He joined us by phone from Eugene, Oregon. The opening ceremonies of the Beijing Olympics happen on August 8th in a month and a week. And today we're focused on the athletes, many of whom try, but only a handful of whom actually make the final cut and get on the Olympic team. We're taking your calls. Have you competed at that level? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. A little bit later this hour, Alex Gibney, the filmmaker, joins us to talk about his latest project, Gonzo, the life and work of Dr. Hunter S. Thompson. But right now, the long road to the Olympics, we're talking with men and women who've trained for a spot on the Olympic team, often making huge commitments and sacrifices along the way. If you've competed at that level, call and tell us your story. 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also share your story on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Joining us now by phone from the Olympic Training Center in Colorado Springs is David Durante. He tried out for the U.S. Men's Gymnastics Olympic team and just missed the cut. He'll be an alternate. And David, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks a lot, Neil. Thanks for having me.
As an alternate, does that mean you get to go to Beijing?
As of right now, there are three alternates, and they'll be taking two to China. We have an Olympic camp in 2 weeks out here at the training center to decide which two will be going.
And so you don't know?
We don't know as of right now, but I think I have a pretty good shot.
Well, two out of three, so at least
exactly.
That much, yeah. How long have you been working towards this goal?
Just about 22 years now.
That's a long time.
Yes, definitely is.
And again, just remind listeners, what's your day like, a typical Tuesday, not at the Olympic trials, but just a typical Tuesday?
Well, I live out here at the Olympic Training Center in Colorado Springs. I live on complex, and I normally have two practices a day. I'll wake up around 9 in the morning, get work done by the trainers and doctors. We normally have about a 2.5 to 3 hour practice in the morning, rest up in the afternoon, have some lunch, go back for another 2.5 to 3 hours at night, and then do some recovery activities. Basically, the whole day is structured around practice and recovery to make sure that we're ready for each practice each day.
And if you've been doing it for more than 20 years, you started as a young boy.
Yeah, I started when I was 6 years old.
And is important? Do you have to start when you're that young?
Gymnastics is a sport that takes a long time to develop. You won't find too many people at the top level that start, you know, in high school or in college. It really is a sport that takes a long time. So most people that get to this level do start very young.
And I guess I have to ask you, if it works out that way and you don't get to go to Beijing, this could be your one chance. You never know. Injury, a lot of things can happen in 4 years' time. Will all of it have been worth it, even if you don't get the chance to go?
Absolutely. Without a doubt, it has all been worth it. I've gotten to travel the world. I've seen most places that people will never get a chance to see. I've met incredible people, made some amazing friends. And to compete for the United States, I've been fortunate enough to be part of the U.S. national team for the past 6 years. And to go out and compete with the USA on your chest is an honor that most people will never get a chance to feel. And whether or not I get to compete in Beijing, I'll still have that, you know, for the rest of my life, and I'm really proud about that.
Let's get a caller on the line, and this is Teresa. Teresa with us from Santa Fe in California.
Hi.
Hi, Teresa.
I have kind of a different perspective on all of this. I was a synchronized swimmer in Santa Clara, and our sport was a demonstration sport for several of the Olympics, including the one in Munich, which I got to go to, and with my teammates. And here we were thinking, wow, you know, we're not at the Olympics yet, but we're being included. And then the tragedy that followed, just it was just kind of a different, there was the joy, and then there was the reality of that happening at the same time.
Of course, that was the Olympics where Israeli athletes were first kidnapped and later murdered.
Yeah, that's right. But the interesting thing was the next year our sport was put into the World Aquatic Championships, and it's been included ever since. And then several of my teammates and I went, we had to have 15 countries, I believe, the minimum in order to have it be an Olympic sport. So I went to Germany and South Africa and coached. I had friends who went to Japan and Canada and Switzerland. And so we all had to kind of fan out in the 70s. In order to bring the sport up to a level where it would be considered a verifiable sport at the Olympic level.
Synchronized swimming is kind of the Rodney Dangerfield of sports. It doesn't get a lot of respect.
Well, but, you know, strangely enough now, the finals are one of the most highly attended of any Olympic finals. So it's kind of, it was nice. It was an adventurous a youth to have.
An adventurous youth and a lot of traveling, and you do get to see a lot of the world.
That's right.
Well, Teresa, thanks very much. A pioneer in synchronized swimming. I appreciate
the phone call.
David Durante, let me ask you, as I understand it, your specialty is the pommel horse. Is that right?
That's one of the events that I'm stronger at. I'd say rings, pommel horse, parallel bars. I'm more of an upper body guy.
And as I understand it, I read your quote after. Is it an objective measurement like track and field? Well, he threw the shot, put the shot further than you did, so he gets to be on the team.
Not quite.
Is it somewhat more less objective in gymnastics?
Yes, it definitely is. The way we select our team now is we have 4 days of qualification over two competitions, our U.S. Nationals, and then we have our Olympic trials, which we just had in Philadelphia a couple weeks ago. And after that, we total up all the scores, and there's a committee of five guys that look over all the scores and take in a bunch of different things into account. And then they select the team according to how they think, you know, the top six guys would fit into that. It's like a big puzzle. Even if you finish in the top, doesn't necessarily guarantee a spot onto the team.
And that's, since it's inevitably not objective, it's got to be something of a disappointment when you figure there can't be all that much difference between you and the next guy.
Yeah, but, you know, we go into it knowing that that's the way that our sport is. We understand that those guys have a very difficult task in selecting the team. I don't envy their position. It's very, very difficult. And, you know, we do everything we can to be selected, and in the end, we leave it up to them, and that's all we can do.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Susan. Susan's calling us from Syracuse in New York.
Hello.
Hi, Susan. You're on the air.
Hi. I've never trained for an Olympic, but when I hear them talking so often about the sacrifice they make and all these things that they do, I'm not sure that they're sacrifices. I believe that it's almost gotten to a point of an addiction, that people let everything else fall aside, family and friends. They don't develop normal lives. They completely self-immerse in this. Now, I'm not against it. But I wonder why it's exalted as such this, you know, this the finest thing, the number one thing to be able to do. And if you don't do it and you fall short, often they feel this sense of failure when certainly a silver medal can't be considered a failure by anyone.
Yeah.
Do you understand the point I'm taking?
Yeah, and just let me ask David Durante. First of all, do you think you've had to make sacrifices, and do you think this is in any way an obsession?
Well, I think that anything worth going after in life you have to make sacrifices for. Probably the biggest sacrifice I've had to make with gymnastics is being away from my family for so long. They mean the world to me. But along with that is that they've been able to share in all of the great parts of what I've been able to do with gymnastics. So, I mean, in any great thing that you go after in your life, sacrifices are needed.
And
in terms of it being an obsession, there's probably an aspect to it where you have to be obsessed to get to the top level. I'm not going to deny that. I'm definitely a perfectionist in that sense, but I really think that it's worth it in the end. You know, if you're willing to go after that, you have to make certain things a priority, and I think that Olympians do that.
Thank you, Susan, for the phone call. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Joining us now from training camp in Knoxville, Tennessee, is Laura Wilkinson. She's the 2000 Olympic gold medalist in women's platform diving. She's also a member of the 2008 Olympic diving team. And Laura, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And obviously, you've been a competitive diver for quite some time.
Yeah, about 15 years.
And again, we're asking athletes at this level about their regimens, their day. What's a normal Tuesday for you?
Well, normally when we're at home, we work out between 6 and 8 hours a day. We do both water work and what we call dry land, which is stretching and somersaulting and trampoline work and, you know, abs and plyos and Pilates, things like that.
That's an awful lot of work. That's a full-time job.
Yep.
And is the reward for that, do you think? Obviously, you're giving up some other things in life. Presumably, by this point, you could be well-launched in a career.
Yeah, but, you know, I started doing this kind of late. For an athlete, I started at 15. I did gymnastics growing up. And, you know, I started having more success kind of later than most people. Teenagers now are kind of, you know, where they're starting to peak and get to this elite level. And I was more starting in my 20s. And, you know, I've been very fortunate. I have Speedo as my sponsor, and they allow me to train full-time. So I do make a little bit of a living, and I also have a very supportive husband who understands what I do. He was a competitive swimmer in college and coached for 5 years, so he's very supportive of what I do.
Excuse me just a second. David Durante, do you have a sponsor?
Yeah, my main sponsor is AT&T.
And do you get paid? You're working out there?
As well as Chevron. Chevron sponsors our whole U.S. national team.
And do you get paid to be a full-time professional gymnast?
Yeah, it's a very small amount of money, but living at the training center, we have no expenses. So anything that I make from my sponsors, I'm able to save.
All right. And Laura Wilkinson, do you get paid by Speedo?
Yes, I get a salary by Speedo. We have a contract with them, so they've taken care of me.
Oh, that's so it's actually improved. We had a caller on earlier from the Olympic team in 1968 and said, boy, things were really tough for women in those days.
Yeah, and I mean, still for diving, it's a smaller sport, so there aren't very many of us that are sponsored, but it's becoming a little easier, and you know, a lot of people in my sport as well are also at their peak in their teenage years, so a lot of them don't get to the point where they need to making an income after college to keep diving. Most of them are usually done around college age.
Okay. Well, David Durante, we're going to let you get back to your regimen, and wish you the best of luck, and I certainly hope we get to see you in Beijing.
I hope so, too. Thanks for having me on.
David Durante, an alternate on the U.S. men's 2008 gymnastics team. He was with us from the Olympic Training Center in Colorado Springs. And let's see if we can get a caller on the line. This is Donna. Donna's with us from Park City in Utah.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Go ahead, please.
I was an Olympic hopeful in the medal debut of women's bobsled in 2002 in Salt Lake. I got into sports competitive at this level much later in life, in my early 30s. The big difference for me was I had come from a very successful corporate career where I had been an officer of a technology company in charge of logistics. So I had a pretty good background in terms of business, and a lot of competing at sports at this level, particularly in a capital-intensive sport like bobsled, is kind of about running your own business. My congratulations go out to Adam Nelson. I'm also a graduate of the Darden School, and that helped me tremendously.
You don't associate immediately business school with competitive athletics.
No, you don't. But in all sports, they require a significant investment in terms of your training facilities, your equipment, your coaching. I mean, the expenses, you can rack them up very, very quickly. And your ability to market yourself and your sports to potential companies is critical, particularly in sports that are very capital intensive and that have very specialized equipment. Building a website, communicating with your people who are supporting you, and whether that be financially or emotionally or physically. But competing at that level is very much like running your own business, particularly if you have to put your own teams together like we did in women's bobsled. You have to go out there and get athletes. You have to procure highly specialized equipment. And then you got to pay for all your travel if you're not in the one or two spots on the national team to compete and become competitive at the Olympic level.
Let me ask Laura Wilkinson. Obviously, you're in an individual sport, not a team sport, and you don't jump off the platform in a bobsled. but would a business background help you?
I mean, it definitely would. I understand what she's saying, and I do have my own website, and I created it, and I run it, and I also did start a foundation. My pool is actually closing at the end of this year, and we need a new pool. There aren't platforms anywhere near where we are, and we have a team that's won the last three nationals in a row, and I'm trying to create a new or build a new facility for my team. So I do understand what she's saying, and it's hard sometimes, especially when we're in sports that aren't on the TV all the time, except maybe around Olympic time. You know, we try to capitalize on that, you know, momentum and that excitement around the games. But you definitely do have to kind of step out and use those business-type skills. I don't have that college background. I mean, I have a college degree, but it wasn't in business. But it definitely comes in handy.
No, Donna, thanks very much. It's very interesting.
You're welcome. But she's got the gold medal, which
yeah. She
is her goal. So congratulations.
Thank you.
We're talking with Laura Wilkinson, a gold medal diver. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And I have to ask you, Laura, is it difficult to keep the motivation to do all that work and work through injuries and broken bones and that sort of thing after you've won a gold medal?
Oh, definitely. I mean, like anything, you're going to have ups and downs, even when it's something you love. And, you know, after I won in Sydney, it was kind of hard to get back on track. I wasn't sure if I wanted to do it. And I came back in Athens and, you know, I made another Olympic team and I got fifth. And, you know, I understand fifth at the Olympics, you know, so few people can ever do that. And it's a great accomplishment. But after having won, it's a little disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it almost felt like there was a carrot kind of dangled in front of me. Like, okay, I know I can do more than this. I know I can do harder dives and I can do them better. And it kind of fueled my fire for the next year. And I've learned a whole new list of dives in the last 4 years. And it's definitely kept it exciting, not just the same old routine.
Let's get another caller in. Carolyn. Carolyn's with us from Portland, Oregon.
Hello.
Hi.
I was just calling to reiterate what the 1964 person said, which was that in our day and age, before television and commercials, we were professional athletes if we did something like lifeguard. So I was in the Olympics at 14. At 16, when I began lifeguarding at $1.25 an hour, I was considered a professional and could not go on with my career.
Therefore ineligible.
Ineligible.
And again, she was also talking about the difficulties that women had in those days, whatever measure.
Exactly. With no Title IX, there were no swimming programs in college. Mm-hmm.
So you all had to do it yourselves pretty well.
You did it. I know that in Rome, I was asked by the Japanese officials if I would be in Tokyo, and I said, no, I won't. I'll be going to college.
Huh. Carolyn, thanks very much for the call.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for the show.
Oh, thank you. Laura Wilkinson, obviously things have changed a great deal since 1960, but in a way you're a pioneer too. You'll be going to Beijing competing against the Chinese. It's a home game for them, and they're the best divers in the world.
Yeah, China dominates our sport, and they have for the past four or five Olympic Games. So going on, you know, in their home turf where they have the advantage, it's definitely puts pressure on the rest of the world, but you know, I like a big challenge, and I think it makes it more exciting when you're trying to knock them off the podium in their own home court. I think it'll be a really fun event, and diving in China is very well accepted. It's one of their biggest sports there, so we go there, and the crowd understands what we do, and they really appreciate it, so it's always a good atmosphere.
Well, good luck to you.
Thank you.
Laura Wilkinson, the 2000 Olympic gold medalist in women's platform diving. She's on her way to Beijing and joined us from training camp in Knoxville in Tennessee. Coming up, the life and work of one of the most colorful and controversial journalists to ever earn a byline, Alex Gibney, on the original gonzo journalist, Dr. Hunter S. Thompson. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.